You're on the elevator up to the press box with Graney and Bischoff.
All right. There has been a lot of reporting from national media this morning on the UNLV Matt Sluka situation. I'm going to try to piece together some of these to give you some of this report. First off, this is a Pete Thamel of ESPN report. His Matthew Sluka's agent, Marcus Cromartie, told ESPN that Sluka was verbally promised a minimum of $100,000 from a UNLV assistant coach for transferring there. None of that money was paid. So the first thing I want to do on this one, how the hell is this a verbal promise?
And not in writing.
Right. What are either sides of this doing with a verbal promise of NIL money? That's insane to me. From both sides. That both Sluka and his family, agent, whatever, would just take a, hey, we're going to offer you a $100,000 phone call and say, all right, good enough for me, and never get it in writing, right? That's also insane that UNLV would offer that they would just say on the phone or whatever, we got $100,000 for you, and then never put anything in writing. That's insane that we would have that, $100,000 there. We also have, from Adam Rittenberger of ESPN, Matthew Sluka's father, Bob Sluka, told ESPN that his son's agent agreed to an NIL deal with the school back in February, never received payments despite requests, and never asked for any adjustments to the original deal. A quote from Bob Sluka is, "We have no idea what the hell happened." We also have this from Bob Sluka. Again, Matt Sluka's father, because I've seen a lot of questions, and they're fair questions, I think, as to why would Sluka quit on September 24th? Like, if he wasn't getting paid NIL money, why wait until week three of the season to quit? Which I think is a perfectly valid question. Here's from Adam Rittenberger. Bob Sluka told me that when Matt reported to UNLV, he was told the NIL deal would be distributed via a payment plan. Then he was told to wait until classes started, and then the games. But during a September 19th call, so 4 days ago, 5 days ago, Matt's agent was told UNLV would not pay anything other than a $300,000 relocation cost.
$3,000.
Sorry, did I say $300,000? Yes. Sorry, $3,000, not $300,000. He'd be fine if it was $300,000, I'm guessing. Excuse me. So according to Matt Sluka's dad, UNLV kept telling him, hey, we're going to pay you when classes start. Nah, wait until the games start. And then on September 19th, they told him, all we're paying you is $3,000 in a relocation cost.
That's what the dad's saying.
What is UNLV doing this morning?
Crafting a statement.
They are getting annihilated this morning. Matt Sluka's dad and Matt Sluka's agent are talking to the biggest national reporters in college sports and burying UNLV. Coming up with, we had a September 19th phone call. Also, by the way, Barry Odom was on that phone call, according to his agent. They are annihilating UNLV by going to the biggest national reporters in college sports. And UNLV is sitting on their hands doing nothing? The only people that have said anything to defend UNLV is Joe Arrigo, who's a joke of a media member, and Paloma Viacana, one local news writer. Is UNLV not leaking anything to any media member right now? They're just getting... They're getting their asses kicked by Matthew Sluka's dad. Like, right now, the only thing you can possibly believe is that UNLV told Sluka he was getting $100,000 and then came back and said, nope, we've only got $3,000 for you. Because the Slukas have details, and they're giving it to ESPN. And UNLV's just sitting around letting this narrative run. What are they doing over there?
Crafting a statement.
Get it together and get it out. I mean, you are getting your ass kicked by a kid who's a quarterback at college, and his dad, Bob Sluka, is doing a better job handling the media than an entire athletic department.
And the agent.
Well, we know how much it means when players follow and unfollow certain teams.
Oh, the best reporting.
He still follows UNLV football.
Well, he still has it in his Twitter bio, or at least he did when he tweeted it last night.
Yeah, I'm not looking at Twitter, but in his Instagram bio, he does not have UNLV. I don't know if he ever did, but right now he does not. But he still follows them. So there's a chance. Maybe.
What are they doing over there? Do something.
They're about to say which conference they're in, I guess.
I guess. But they are getting annihilated by Bob Sluka, of all people. They've got a whole department, a whole media relations department that is doing what today?
Is basketball practice going on?
Why is Barry Odom not telling Adam Rittenberger, hey, this is what happened? Right. What are you doing? You're getting your quarter. You are in the best season you've ever had. You have a chance to play in the college football playoff, and your quarterback quit. And now you're letting the quarterback's dad control the narrative? What are they good at over there? Do something. Nobody in the world right now is going to believe that, oh, we paid him everything. Don't worry, we handled this, because UNLV is doing nothing. Absolutely nothing. And Bob Sluka is out here like, yeah, we had a phone call on the 19th. They said they weren't paying us $3,000. This is after they told us we were given $100,000. And then they said, wait until classes start. And then they said, wait until games start. And we still got nothing. And then they eventually told us, nope, you're only getting $3,000. We don't have any actual proof, right? There's no actual physical receipts. We don't have a Venmo payment from Barry Odom to Matthew Sluka to prove anything. But they've at least got details, while UNLV's got what right now?
We haven't heard from them.
And that's the entire problem. Either put out a statement or start leaking some damn information to the media. I mean, what is going on? By the way, how the hell did they let Matthew Sluka break this news yesterday?
Well, in fact, if he had already told them that he was leaving.
Then you should be leaking to the media, our quarterback's going into the portal because some other school's poaching him. That should, if UNLV knew Sluka was quitting before his 9:30 p.m. tweet, which I'm guessing they did because it was a 9:30 p.m. tweet, why on earth did UNLV not get out ahead of this? Why are they not calling Pete Thamel or Adam Rittenberger or Nicole Auerbach and saying, hey, our quarterback is about to hit the portal because other schools are offering him more money, or whatever narrative they want to craft?
Are you fascinated, which I am, is where he ends up? Because then that might have been the school.
Yes, because it's going to be Boise State. They're trying to.
I don't think it's going to be Boise.
They're trying to.
I don't think it's going to be Mountain West Conference.
They're trying to tank UNLV's entire.
What if it's Fresno State and he was on their sideline in a shirt on Saturday?
Oh God, Connor Stallions.
Connor Stallions. That's right.
Where he's at a high school. I don't think Sluka's got any high school eligibility left. Maybe Connor Stallions is getting a job somewhere and is like, I like that kid. Let me go get him. It's going to be great.
He can tell us the plays before the game.
Yeah, I am genuinely like, where does he go? Because. Here's the thing, because there was another quote from Bob's, or maybe it's from his agent, I can't remember which one, but either his agent or his dad said something to the effect of, like, this is not the first time this has happened to a player, basically implying that other players have been promised NIL money and then not gotten it. So, which I don't have a hard time believing that, the kids have been told, hey, we're going to give you this much money, it's a verbal agreement, and then they get to the game, and then they get to the school, and it's like, well, we can only do this much, and, you know, we're in week four, so what are you going to do, quit on us? And most people wouldn't quit, but Sluka did in this scenario. The fascinating part is that Sluka still can have a year of eligibility. Right? Like, that's why he's quitting now.
Yeah, because if he didn't, then he would, I think, just play it out.
Right. That's why he's quitting now. Because I've seen a couple people who obviously don't follow UNLV too closely that have said, like, why didn't he just play the season out and then he could go in the portal? That's not an option for him. If he plays the season out, his college career is over.
Yeah, you make a really good point on the agent saying that not everyone's been paid, because you hear these numbers and half the time, like, I don't believe them. Who did we have on? We had on someone that said Arch Manning, $14 million. Like, do you truly believe that? See, I just don't.
14's way too much.
That's a lot. That's way too much.
But
they throw out these numbers.
Who is the Florida? Jaden Rashada? Who sued Florida over $13 million, I think, that he claimed he was owed and then wasn't, because that's a ridiculous number, and I think he's still suing them at the moment. Yeah, some of the numbers that get thrown out are ridiculous. Now, do I believe that UNLV offered Sluka $100,000 or could have paid him, like, that's not a crazy number. Like, that's certainly in the realm of possibility that UNLV offered him $100,000 or he thought he, whatever. $100,000 isn't this number where you're like, there's no way UNLV offered that. If Sluka's dad was out here saying, yeah, we thought we were getting $5 million from UNLV, you'd be like, all right, well, you're an idiot.
Well, yeah, your kid's got a 40% passing percentage.
Well, UNLV doesn't have $5 million to give you, so you're an idiot. But $100,000 seems within the realm of possibility for a Group of Five school.
I just don't know. Some of these numbers are crazy. Some of the, not this one, but some of these numbers that are crazy that you, like you just said, like, or the agent said, like, they were not followed through on. Well, the number was probably erroneous to begin with.
Yeah. Can I ask you a completely hypothetical question? Outside of Sluka, UNLV has six other players listed as starters on their depth chart that transferred in this year. Are they all getting paid their NIL money?
I mean, transferred in and starting, you'd think there was NIL agreements, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's kids. If you're a starter and you're a transfer now and you know you're going to start, you go where the NIL is.
Right.
I mean, because everyone's got NIL to some degree. So, I mean, no one else has quit.
Like, the thing to me is,
but no one, they all, by the way, all of them don't have eligibility left. He had eligibility left.
Right. A lot, I think most of them, I'd have to double check, but
are just, they're done.
Yeah. And in theory, some of them have an extra year after this and could play and then hit the portal after this season or whatever. But I do, like, if what Sluka's family and agent are saying is true and they were promised $100,000 verbally, and then UNLV and their collective said, no, just wait till games, wait till classes. All right, we still don't have it. All right, we're only giving you $3,000. If that's true, then there's a good chance that happened to other kids at UNLV too. Like, if all that happened to Sluka, why would it not be happening to other players too? Like, why would they not pay Sluka but would be paying everybody else on this team? Like, their whole secondary is
transfers.
Right? So, like, that part of it jumps out as like, is there going to be more to this? Because if I transferred to UNLV and I was promised $50,000 and I haven't gotten it and I just see my quarterback just quit and he's claiming that they paid him $3,000 instead of $100,000, I might be quitting too. I might be saying, wait a minute, I haven't gotten paid. This guy didn't get paid and you screwed him around. Where's my money? Right, what do you do? So I'm curious if anything else comes from this. Player-wise
in terms of other players.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it opens the door as to what exactly are they doing. Right.
Well, there's agents out there who are going to represent these kids. We know that. And they can convince kids of a lot. Agents can, obviously.
I can't believe UNLV hasn't done anything or said anything this morning. I can't believe it. Sluka is destroying them this morning. They look completely incompetent based on everything the Slukas have said. Completely incompetent. And they are letting it go. Nothing is being done. No effort to get in front of this story and prevent that narrative from being out there. Whereas right now, UNLV looks like a completely incompetent program. And they're just letting it fester. Say something. Do something this morning. And by the way, what conference are you playing in?
That's become the secondary story.
Does anybody know the answer to that question?
No,
either?
No.
There was Ross Dellinger wrote a story yesterday for Yahoo, and in that story it said UNLV's decision between the Pac-12 and Mountain West is expected early Tuesday. It's now early Wednesday, and they've lost a quarterback, and we still don't know what conference they're in. Just do something. Say something. Do, like, this is the type of day that you should have an impromptu press conference.
Well, we should be getting a email about a press conference.
Yes, there should be. We're having a press conference in 30 minutes because everything's gone to hell in the last 48 hours. We don't know what conference we're in, and we don't know who our quarterback is anymore. And his dad's out here just trashing the hell out of us.
And here's Haj Malik Williams.
Right.
To talk about how they're going to beat Fresno on Saturday. And here's Cameron Friel mad that he's not the guy.
By the way, listen to the Barry Odom Coaches Show tonight right here on ESPN Las Vegas, 6 p.m. Danny. Is it at the St. Parkway Tavern?
Yes, on Flamingo.
Flamingo in 215. You can go in person. You can listen to it right here on ESPN Las Vegas.
And apparently they are doing a special where if you wear UNLV Rebel gear, the first beer is on Barry Odom.
That's...
What if you're wearing a Matthew Sluka jersey?
You get water.
Coming up next, it's Bischoff's Briefs.
Bischoff's Briefs, brought to you by Paul Padilla. It's not about the injury. It's about the recovery. Bischoff's Briefs.
Stuffing should be stuffed inside the turkey. Am I correct?
It can also be made from a casserole dish.
Well, then we'd have to call it something else, wouldn't we?
Bischoff's Briefs.
Expectations for us are low as a rattlesnake's belly button, huh? But hey, you got 38 chances to prove all them folks wrong, right?
Bischoff's Briefs.
My hopes are as high as a draft's top hat.
Bischoff's Briefs.
All right, I got a couple of different things I want to get to in Bischoff's Briefs today. The first one is just a heads up. Watch the Indiana Fever play basketball tonight because it's probably the last time you're going to see Caitlin Clark play basketball for the season. The Fever are taking on the Connecticut Sun in Game 2. WNBA playoff format, the first round is a best of three. So if Indiana loses, their season is over. If they win, they get Game 3 at home, though. So Caitlin Clark tonight against Connecticut and potentially the season there. I also wanted to mention one thing in baseball that we haven't gotten to yet, but the Detroit Tigers won again yesterday. And right now, the AL wild card scenario is that Baltimore has clinched a spot in the playoffs. Detroit and Kansas City are tied for wild card 2 and 3. Minnesota is 2 games back with 4 to play. Seattle is 2.5 back. That's getting very precarious there for either of those teams to make a push for a playoff spot. So it looks like the Tigers are probably going to be in the playoffs. But here's the interesting part to me. Their best pitcher, who's going to win the Cy Young, Tarek Skubal, threw 7 shutout innings last night. Skubal could pitch on the final day of the regular season on regular rest. So if the Tigers go into the final day having not clinched anything, Skubal almost certainly will pitch that day to give them the best chance at winning and clinching a playoff spot. If that were to happen, Skubal might not be able to pitch in the wild card series at all. He would for sure be out for game 1, would for sure be out for game 2. He could maybe come back and pitch game 3 of a wild card series, but even that would be on 3 days rest. I'm guessing the Tigers would do that, but that would be on 3 days rest. He's the best pitcher in the American League, right? That's a automatic advantage for Detroit, but if they have to throw him on Sunday to clinch a playoff spot, he might not even be able to pitch in the wild card series. Now, if the Detroit Tigers can clinch a playoff spot prior to the final day of the season, then all of a sudden they don't have to throw Skubal and they can hold him and Tarek Skubal can pitch game 1 of a wild card series. And all of a sudden the Detroit Tigers will have gone from like 3 weeks ago having a 7 or 8% chance to make the playoffs to having the best pitcher in the American League pitching game 1 of a wild card series where you only need to win 2 out of 3 to advance. The Tigers could actually be in the ALDS after being out of the playoffs, or should have been out of the playoffs 3 weeks ago. So that's where we stand. Detroit and Kansas City tied right now, probably going to be the two that make it in.
Something tells me, because I'm looking at the schedule for those 4 that are in the race right now, I don't think Skubal's going to have to pitch on Sunday.
You think they'll have it wrapped up? It's 2 games now, by the way. I believe, I'd have to double check. I do think they lose the tiebreaker. So I think even if they're up a game on Minnesota going into the final day, they'll have to play, right? Mm-hmm. Obviously, if Minnesota loses, they're good, but they won't know because they'll play at roughly the same time. So I think they lose the tiebreaker, which hurts them for the whole can we save Skubal or not. But yeah, up 2 with 4 or 5 to play for all these teams is, that's about as good as you can ask for.
Yeah, and their remaining schedule is all at home, so they don't have any traveling, and their last 3 games are against the White Sox.
They're hot, Danny. They beat the Angels last night.
Oh, stop it.
By the way, did you see how the Angels gave up a run last night?
No.
Pop up like 10 feet behind second base, dropped it. Run came in to score, inning extended. Next batter, I think, got a hit to drive in the go-ahead run. Jeff Passan tweeted out that the Angels were out White Soxing the White Sox.
No. After the play that we got a couple weeks ago, you can't get any better. And I say better loosely. It was a really bad play, but boy, that was great. But as far as the Twins, they end the season against Baltimore.
But Baltimore's going to be done.
Yeah, but they're still going to, at least Friday and maybe Saturday, they're going to play tough and then probably rest a few
guys. They probably won't
Sunday.
At all.
You don't think for any of those games?
I mean, why would they? They're almost certainly going to be locked into the first wild card spot.
I think they already are, aren't they? Did the Yankees clinch the division?
I don't know if they clinched it. But, like, Danny, the Astros clinched the AL West last night.
Yes.
Jose Altuve's not playing today. Yordan Alvarez, he wasn't going to play, but he's not playing today. Alvarez isn't even traveling with the team to Cleveland.
Smart.
He's not on the IL, but they're not even going to put him on the plane to Cleveland because none of those games matter
right.
for the Astros. They're going to play, like, Altuve will play some more, but they're going to be playing, Shea Whitcomb is hitting seventh for the Astros today. Right? Like, that's what the Orioles are going to do. They're going to rest their guys. So, yes, in theory, the Orioles are good, but they're not going to be playing their full lineup.
Orioles and Yankees currently five games between them. So, if Orioles lose one or Yankees win one, it's over.
I do want to read a couple of texts from our text line, 702-364-1100. Brian said earlier today, maybe UNLV's working on the buyout money and needed to use some of Sluka's NIL. That would be quite funny. Rob said maybe Sluka was Pierce's business decision. Also, Reed said, in all reality, seems to me like they promised Sluka $100,000 and a starting position. His passing is so bad they had buyer's remorse and decided to wait as long as possible to pay and finally decided he wasn't worth it. Awful business. I guess that's possible, but the thing with me and the fact that this is $100,000, why couldn't UNLV raise that? Like, yesterday at some point they had to have learned Sluka's planning to quit and he's the starting quarterback of the team that's 3-0. They couldn't find a way to raise $100,000 to keep Matthew Sluka. Like, that's that part seems like what happened there.
Also, if being the starter was part of getting that money, he fulfilled that. Whether he gets benched or not, he fulfilled it for at least the first 3 weeks.
Yeah. Now, his dad, talking to ESPN, from what I've seen, hasn't said anything about playing time or starting. It was just simply, they told us we were getting $100,000, and then they kept delaying and saying, we'll get to it eventually, and then said, nope, we're only doing $3,000. So from his dad, none of this has anything to do with playing time or who's the starter or who's not the starter. It's simply a promise of money that wasn't fulfilled.
And this is a classic case of apparently common sense is not so common anymore. Rule number one of any contract, you get it in writing.
Right, 100%. To not have this in writing for either side is just unbelievable.
It's the same thing like what was going on with Michigan with Sherrone Moore. Like, he just worked 9 months without an actual contract in writing.
Yeah.
Like, come on.
He had a memorandum of understanding.
Oh, he understood.
Sluka did not have a memorandum of understanding.
Are we sure?
Apparently. We don't know that yet. We don't know. All right, coming up next here on ESPN Las Vegas, Ash from Sam and Ash joins the show.
This has been Bischoff's Briefs, brought to you by Paul Pata Law. It's not about the injury. It's about the recovery. Ash from Sam and Ash Law joins the press box. In a crash, call Sam and Ash or go to samandashlaw.com.
Good morning, Ash.
Good morning, Tyler. No Ed.
Hi, Ash. How are you?
Ed's here. He just didn't have his headphones.
I didn't have the headphones on. Come on.
We're lucky. Oh,
come on, Ed.
I know.
We're lucky Ed's microphone still works. It broke before the show started. It's broken twice this week. So we're lucky we can hear Ed
today.
It's
falling all over the studio. If Rocky was here, it would have hit him in the head about
guaranteed.
10 times.
Yeah,
it hit
no
him
doubt
in the
about
head
it.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh. Just put a Cowboys logo on that microphone, and it's living up to all expectations.
Exactly.
Oh, the poor Cowboy. I got to talk to three of you at one time. The poor Cowboys are bad, aren't they?
They're bad, and I can't quite figure it out. I mean, no run defense.
No.
The offense, there seems to be no chemistry between CeeDee Lamb and Dak, and likely because no training camp for them because of the contract negotiations. I don't know. Hopefully we can change it around, make it to the playoffs, and do something silly.
Yeah, they're going to the Super Bowl. Don't worry.
He keeps saying this.
I know.
I mean, I hope he's right.
Have you seen the meme all around the internet, or have people been sending it to you where it's the Cowboys logo and it says, it's not a logo, it's a rating?
Yes.
I was like, gosh, I received countless texts with that. And I was like, okay, I get it.
No,
thank you.
It's a good one. It's a good one. All right. We need your help here on this whole Pac-12 Mountain West saga at the moment. So to set this up, Pac-12 falls apart. There's two members left, Oregon State and Washington State. They don't have anybody to play because their conference doesn't technically exist with more than two members. And so they signed a scheduling agreement with the Mountain West. They agreed to pay the Mountain West money to play six games each against Mountain West opponents. A part of this scheduling agreement, though, was a poaching fee, which basically said from the Mountain West perspective to protect themselves, hey, if the Pac-12 tries to take members from the Mountain West, we're going to charge you money. It's $10 million per school. And now the Pac-12 has taken five members from the Mountain West, and they are suing the Mountain West, claiming that these poaching fees are not legal. So I guess my first question, are they legal? Can you put these poaching fees into this contract and say, hey, if you take any of our members, you got to pay us $10 million
more? Yeah, so it looks like this is a legal provision. The arguments, though, that the Pac-12 is making is generally that this overall does not promote fair trade or competition amongst all the teams. And so as a general rule, it violates our federal antitrust laws. And so it should be deemed illegal, unenforceable, et cetera. And yes, and so what the Mountain West is saying is they're going, well, you signed it. You have sophisticated legal counsel at the time that could read it, understand it, et cetera. And what I'm looking at it, I go, yeah, they did. But also at that moment, the Pac-12 had zero leverage. They needed games. This was the most logical solution. And their counsel could have very well said, this provision, we're confident in being able to challenge it later on. So let's not deal with it. You know the Mountain West wants this or will not move away from this provision. And let's deal with it later on if and should it come to surface and be relevant. Don't break up this scheduling agreement over this right now. And so, look, I'm a fair market person. I think the Mountain West should have done a better job of keeping and incentivizing the schools to staying, and clearly they didn't.
So I'm curious on the like under duress part of this, because the Pac-12, part of their argument is that they were basically taken advantage of by the Mountain West because the Pac-12 was in such a bad state. Does that matter? Like when this lawsuit, assuming it gets heard or whatever, does that matter that one side was in such a bad place that they couldn't negotiate properly?
Absolutely. It's going to be tough for the Pac-12 to truly, I think, prove duress because of their sophistication, their financial abilities. They could have found alternative solutions is going to be the biggest argument. Duress is really something that, you know, you look at with most commonly we hear it with what are the prenuptial agreements where one person doesn't have the leverage, they're up against a clock, they have no other alternative solutions, they can't afford to go get a lawyer. And so they say, look, I signed this prenuptial agreement under duress, and as a result, it shouldn't be enforced against me. This is going to be interesting, and I think ultimately what's going to happen is the Pac-12 will pay some amount of money to the Mountain West outside of court. They'll reach a settlement agreement. No one will want case law proving that these poaching agreements are illegal, unenforceable. So they'll reach some type of mutually agreed upon amount to pay.
Yeah, I was going to ask you that because right when this happened, the first thing I thought of is, well, they're just trying to get these lowered. Like they know eventually they're going to have to pay, but they don't want to pay the 40, whatever the $1 million is. It's like, all right, we'll sue them. And then eventually we're just going to get these lowered and it's not going to be so extravagant.
Or it's not even just get them lowered. Sometimes, like insurance companies, they won't pay today. They'll rather pay more later on as long as they get the time with the money. So the Pac-12 could very well just be buying itself some time to get the money, invest that money, let it grow a little, and then be able to pay whatever these penalties are and potentially even more. That's what insurance companies do day in and day out with civilians and their accident claims. They say, okay, you want 10 grand, 100 grand today. We believe it's worth it, but we're going to make you litigate this and spend 2 years of time, energy, and money to get that amount, because we've now had 2 years with that money to invest it and make it grow into more. It's a financial business decision. Right. And it's terrible. It's not fair, but it happens.
I'm going to be bad at my job because I don't know exactly where I'm going with this question when I started here.
Awesome.
But, so the Pac-12 is suing the Mountain West over poaching fees because the Pac-12 is taking members from the Mountain West. But
right.
The members they're taking, they all agreed to this contract as well, this scheduling agreement. Like, all the presidents had to sign off on this as well. And so I guess, like, how does that play into this where the Pac-12 is claiming they were under duress, but five of the people they are stealing were the ones that were putting them under duress when they signed the scheduling agreement?
That's interesting. I mean, I don't think it's necessarily they're not going after the individual schools. The Mountain West just has to get agreement from its members before it takes action. So I don't know if that's really going to come into play. It's really kind of a fascinating thing. I'm also just curious. I haven't seen the exact provision. I would argue that it wasn't poaching. Maybe, you know, these different teams all approached the Pac-12 and said, like, we want to join you. We're over what the Mountain West is doing for us, and we think we can get better recognition nationally and better media deals with you. And so maybe it doesn't even fall within the definition of poaching.
I do want to talk about our favorite team, the Oakland, soon-to-be yes. Sacramento, and maybe Las Vegas A's in the future. So they are playing their final home game in the Oakland Coliseum on Thursday. There was a story in ESPN where some of the A's players were basically like, yeah, they told us to not stay on the field. Just get off the field as soon as the game is over. I saw another story that the Texas Rangers, who they're playing, have also been told, like, hey, you guys need to be aware when this game ends. That's it. And something could happen. I don't know if I expect anything to actually happen, but like, what if something does happen? Like, fans are ripping chairs out and throwing it on the field. Like, what could come from this when we kind of already know that there's a possibility of some violence or some sort of bad actions that happen at the end of this game?
Well, right now, if the teams are already warning their players, I would anticipate and expect that the Coliseum, the Oakland arena, the stadium, to be on notice of this potential uprising, whatever. I mean, first they got to get fans to the game, but they should have more security there. They should be able to mitigate all of this risk. That's the biggest thing. They're aware of what's going to potentially happen. They're aware of the risk and the possible danger and injuries that could come from it. So like any business owner, property owner, you have an obligation to protect people from potential injuries that could result. So there should be a lot more security at that event.
This will be like basketball tournament, NCAA tournament, where you have the yellow coats and the red coats
to stop the storming of the court.
The storming of the court, and it never works. Like, they're like, all right, get out of the way, because they're all like really old guys in red coats, and like, this isn't stopping us. I was at the Mountain West Conference tournament 1 year, and, you know, hey, God bless them, but these people in the red coats were like 70 or 80, and it's a BYU UNLV, and I'm like, there's no way they're stopping these kids, and they couldn't.
Yeah.
Kids were coming over me. One almost broke my laptop. They were coming over the chairs and the tables and everything. I'm like, these doesn't stop me. So I can see in Oakland tomorrow all these poor people lining up to stop them, and people wanting to go out and get dirt and grass and whatever else they want out of this Coliseum.
Yeah, they really should also have local law enforcement
yes.
there. I mean, it really should be almost a riot prevention situation. Did you guys see the Colorado game? I mean, there was still a potential.
Oh yeah.
When the game wasn't technically over yet.
Yeah, and the fans took down the goalposts already, and we're already on the field. I was like, that's wild.
Ash, just but, so you know, Ed is going to be at the A's game tomorrow.
Yes.
So
got one fan or one spectator.
Spectator.
So yeah. Ed might be one of these people getting hurt and trying to sue. Who are you suing? Who are you suing tomorrow, Ed? You suing the A's?
I don't know, but I know who's representing me.
Fake John Fisher? You got to sue fake John Fisher. That's the important part
fake
there.
Fake John Fisher.
Oh, yeah.
We'll sue the right John Fisher for you, Ed. Don't worry.
I don't know. It could be the fake John Fisher you need to sue. He might have more money than the real John
Fisher.
Yeah,
we don't know. He might
Seriously.
Spend more on his players.
It could happen there.
Did you guys see the hat that was circulating for sale? The A's hat?
Is it real?
I don't know. I was hoping you guys have already done the research and debunked it. But
somebody sent me a link to it, and the link was dead. So I don't know if it was real and they pulled it down or somebody. I don't know.
I saw it before they pulled it down. So they did pull it down.
Yeah. So it's a great hat. I hope somebody bought it.
They'll be selling for a ton of money on eBay.
All right, Ash, in a crash, call Sam and Ash at 702-303-0333 or go to samandashlaw.com. Ash, as always, great to talk
Thanks,
to you.
Thanks, Ash.
Always fun, guys. Have fun up in Oakland.
Thank you.
For anybody who didn't see it, there, I think it was New Era, had like a new hat style for every baseball team where the logo gets blown up and then it's sort of made into like shadows. And so you get the logo kind of repeating itself. And so for the A's logo, if you blow it up and sort of have a shadow of the logo over and over, it's the A, the apostrophe, an S, and then another S, and then another S. Right. It's a great hat. I think a lot of people, I think they should be selling that hat. A lot
well,
of
the- if it was real and it happened, and as Ash said, and people got it, they'll be resold.
Best selling hat the A's are ever going to have. All right, we got more tickets to give away. This time it's to go to the Shriners Children's Open, October 17th through the 20th at TPC Summerlin. You'll see some of the best golfers in the world. Tickets are available at ShrinersChildrensOpen.com. Also, you can go to our website, LVSportsNetwork.com, and register to win VIP tickets. Again, that's LVSportsNetwork.com. Register to win some VIP tickets. But right now, you can just win a pair of tickets from us. 702-364-1100. That is the phone number. Call in now. Caller number 8 at 702-364-1100. You're going to take home two tickets to the Shriners Children's Open.
Live from the Findlay Toyota ESPN Las Vegas studios, this is the Press Box with Granny and Bischoff on ESPN Las Vegas.
I have no idea where Ed went, but Ed is not in the studio.
Yeah, he just walked out. He's like, all right, you guys take it.
All right, I got a couple of things to get to. First off, Paloma Viacana says that Eric Harper, the athletic director for UNLV, is going to be on Fox 5 at 10 a.m.
Correct.
So when you're done listening to me yell about things, Eric Harper, the AD, is apparently going to be on Fox 5. There's two things. I'm assuming he's going to be asked or talked about both. Are they going to the Pac-12 and what the hell's going on with the quarterback? But we'll see what Harper actually talks about at 10 o'clock on Fox 5. Also, Mike Grimala is out at UNLV football practice, and Barry Odom doesn't normally do a press conference outside of Monday. We'll see if Odom talks. We have two updates, by the way, from UNLV's side of things, both from Ross Dellinger. The first one, Rob Sine, the CEO of Blueprint Sports, which operates UNLV's collective, tells Yahoo Sports that the collective never agreed to a $100,000 deal with quarterback Matthew Sluka. It made a payment of $3,000 to Sluka, and we're discussing a monthly payment of $3,000 before the quarterback's decision this week. So that basically upholds what Matthew Sluka's father said about there is no $100,000. They've only gotten $3,000 so far. Also, according to Ross Dellinger, the agent Marcus Cromartie, who has been talking to the media this morning, is not a registered agent in the state of Nevada. I don't know what that means, because this is not professional sports with a players union. So I don't know who you have to be registered with to be the agent of a college athlete. I don't understand that. I don't know who you get registered with. Are you supposed to register with the NCAA? Is that something that happens? I don't know the answer to that. But according to this company that runs UNLV's collective, this agent is not a registered agent in the state of Nevada. But we do have confirmed from both sides, from Sluka and from UNLV's collective, one bit of information has been said by both. Sluka has only been paid $3,000. That is it. That is the only amount of money he has been paid so far. Sluka thinks that he agreed to play here and get $100,000. The UNLV collective is saying we never agreed to give him $100,000. So that's where this is differing at the moment. I would say from a common sense standpoint, Matthew Sluka transferred from Holy Cross to UNLV. I highly doubt Matthew Sluka agreed to transfer in the NIL era for only $3,000. That sounds highly unlikely that would happen.
So just doing a very, very quick and rough Google search, agents have to register with the NCAA as well as the state of the player that they represent.
This, what in the state, though?
I guess just like, with the state board, they have to be licensed.
The board of what? They're not lawyers. You don't have to be a lawyer. Like, the board of what?
I thought agents are considered lawyers.
Are they? You got to pass the bar to be an agent for a college athlete?
I thought you do.
That's
I don't know. It's way above me. That's why I run the board.
I also want to read one tweet from Mike Romala that I think might encapsulate a bigger problem for UNLV. Under Barry Odom's direction, all UNLV players receive the same NIL deal. He generally doesn't want individuals making more money than their teammates. Only Ricky White has gone outside that structure to secure a significant individual NIL deal.
That's interesting because that happens at San Diego State basketball. They all make the same money.
Right. Regardless of what happens with Sluka, I think having a head coach that requires or wants everybody to make the same exact amount of money is terrible for a college football program in 2024. Matthew Sluka is worth more than whoever the hell the seventh wide receiver is on the depth chart. And if Barry Odom is like, nope, all players make the same, that is not good for your program in 2024. You need to be willing to pay Matthew Sluka more than whoever your left guard is.
Well, it's not, let's say, common.
Right.
It's not common across. I mean, people don't realize P5, P4 now. P4 quarterback, starting quarterback transfers are looking at $1 million.
Yes. Oh, yeah. And so, by the way, if Barry Odom wants everybody to make the same amount of money, why did Sluka think he was making $100,000? Who told Sluka
what assistant
he was making $100,000?
If we believe what the parents are saying, there's an assistant out there who floated that number.
Right.
And that was wrong to do, if in fact everyone makes the same amount of money.
Right. That part seems bizarre if Barry Odom is making sure everybody makes the same amount.